This is Ryan Nilsson sitting with Lucy Boutet. Thanks. We're in Portland, Oregon at the National Farm Worker Ministry board meeting, sitting in a dorm room at Portland State University. And today is August 25th. It's about 9:25 a.m. And I'm just going to ask you a few questions. So Lucy, how did you first get involved with the National Farm Worker Ministry?
I had previously been, I previously worked 2 years with the UFW organizing, and one of the organizers, lead organizer, is in LA, Roman Pinal, and there was a need for some support work for the UFW, and that was about in 2008, I believe. So they, Roman knew that I was in town and that I had worked with him previously on some, with getting some church congregations out to some actions and that. So he invited me to talk to, first to do that one project, and it was under NFWM, but we spoke with Virginia through the phone, and I did. It was about like 2 month little project campaign. It was really fun because it was about getting some different congregations on board to support farm workers, a letter writing campaign and some petitioning and that kind of stuff. Then about, 2009, they called me again, and then they offered me the job. National Farm Worker Ministry offered me a job, part-time at first. And I thought, oh, this is fun. I think so. It's right up my alley because I'm very connected with my church, Catholic Church. So it fit with what else I was doing on a volunteer basis. It really fit well because I'm visiting churches and church groups and talking to pastors. So now I could do both. Talk to pastors about National Farm Worker Ministry and about the farm worker issue. So I've been, it's been 3 years this month, I think. It's been great.
So when you came on staff, your job transitioned into working more directly with churches? Or what is your overall involvement since you started working with the National Farm Worker Ministry look like?
It's very fluid, but basically it's about getting... advocating for farm workers, creating a constituency that understands the farm worker issue and is ready to support in whatever way necessary. Mostly it's through petitioning or going to actions or writing or making telephone calls. Created a or developed a interfaith advisory committee with some religious, about 12 members so far, but I'm trying to build that up. And they're Catholic, there's Jewish, Presbyterian, Episcopalian, and Lutheran. Still have to extend to other denominations and non-Christian denominations. So they're there to support us in whatever way their congregations can, to motivate, educate, inform, and advocate for farm workers. And the other is a lay leaders support group. Because I work with Catholic Church through the Charismatic Renewal, Spanish speaking, I have access to many groups on a regular basis, especially a monthly basis, because we have we conduct a formation process. It's called the Convocatoria once a month. They gather the leaders from different prayer groups in the San Gabriel Pastoral Region, which is one region of the Archdiocese in Los Angeles, and we have about, there are 65 churches in that region under Bishop Zavala. Bishop Zavala is my bishop. He named me coordinator for those, for the Charismatic Renewal. So, and I work out of his office. Out of those 65 parishes, there are about maybe 30 Spanish-speaking prayer groups. So those are the groups, the leaders from the groups that we try to engage in to come and get some formation. Through that, I'm able to talk about justice, specifically about farm workers. And because they're Hispanic, most of them are immigrant, it's really connected. We've been able to do a number of things, like we organized a and they raised the funds and for a bus to Bakersfield to do a trip about 2 years ago. So we took about 70 people in a bus and several vans to Bakersfield to visit. First, we visited La Paz, where Cesar Chavez is buried. There's a museum. It's a beautiful place. We had lunch there. They got a little presentation. They went to a museum, had some prayer. Then we went to visit workers in Bakersfield, and that was amazing. Because what we did, too, is, yeah, that was one activity. They took food, and we fed the workers and gave them champurrado, which is a Mexican rice drink that they loved. And so it was really great. Another time we took, because farm workers have died in the field, since 2004, 15 farm workers died in the field due to heat-related illnesses.
In California?
In California, I'm sorry, yes. In California alone, that we know of. And only because the UFW went out and investigated. Because, you know, it's not something that they make public. They try and hide it and say it was something else. So, and I'm sure if we had had the resources to go out and do further investigation, we would have found more. So, since 2004, most of the deaths in the hot, hot summer months, of course, July and August. So, only because they're not provided water, shade, and rest. Education about dehydration for the farm worker and for the their supervisors. So that people suffer when they don't. I remember one of the stories of one of the farm workers that his colleague went to look to check him out, and he looked into his eyes. He says he looked just totally, really, really bad, weak, and that the man looked him in the eyes and said, "I don't want to die." And he did. So that's what it's all about. We went that one time. We took water and shade or canopies. It was a symbolic gesture, of course. That doesn't do the trick. It's not about that. It's about the workers really having the same rights you and I have, right? So, but the people that we took were even more touched than the people that went that were there than the farm workers. Much more because they got to see their brothers, you know, and sisters, and the difficulty and the work that they do. It's hard. I didn't think it was going to be, but you start talking about it and it touches you. So farm workers are really suffering, but it was really beautiful to see the conversation on the way back, how different it was and on the way in there, about the commitment they have to, you know, to continue the work with farm workers. It was, yes, and then their job then was to go back to the churches and share the stories, which they did. We took pictures, and it was very good. And it's not enough, because that's, you know, one van load, one bus load, and another. So it's a continual struggle to make people aware that the food that we eat has been touched by farm workers, and sometimes at a great, great sacrifice. So we continue the journey. And I think you were going to ask me something else. I can go on and on.
Yeah. Would just stop. Oh, that's cool. I mean, I appreciate what you're sharing. You mentioned how coming from your involvement with your church, mm-hmm. and you mentioned the Catholic charismatic renewal movement. How would you say that your faith beliefs or values have impacted your involvement with the National Farm Worker Ministry?
I think I don't think I could see myself doing the work without the faith element. And I think, yeah, I think this it has deepened my faith because I've been able to put it in action in a more concrete way, a more direct way, you know. Because we talk about faith in our church and we do good works and we, you know, we organize people and this and that. But here we actually come back and we almost see it not come to fruition, but come to touch somebody's life concretely You know, when we go visit the workers, when I talk to them, when we do the marches, when we do, you know, that connection becomes very, very, it's almost synchronized with my faith, working and touching them. It's, yeah, I think it's been very, very, very helpful for me. It's been an asset, really. And not only my own, you know, belief and faith and basic that, you know, every man, every woman has, is worthy of dignity. I mean, dignity is already there, it's yours. And that we need to honor that in the other. And that we are responsible for our brothers. That has, I mean, it just become much, much deeper and stronger and real. Before it was a little bit more in my head. I think it's coming down to my heart a little bit. That the other thing is that by having the connection with the church, I've been able to get in and probably reach especially clergy who I might not have had access to or wouldn't have really talked to us, because I'm sort of I've been around so long in the church that they know who I am, and just with that, I think it's opened some doors for us. So that, yeah. Couldn't do it without some type of belief, and, you know, it doesn't have to be Christian, it doesn't have to be Catholic, it doesn't have to be, probably doesn't even have to be about God, although for me it is, but, you know, anybody who believes in the dignity of the human person, I think, could do it if they tap deep and look into the eyes of the farmer. Yeah.
In your own faith community, or in the faith communities that you've been able to interact with through this work with the ministry, have you came across people who didn't see it that way or disagreed?
I went once to, I was invited about 2 years ago, I think, to a, what's the organization? It was in Orange County. Not nice, no, it wasn't Catholic, it was like a Chamber of Commerce type of thing, and I don't know why they invited me, but they wanted someone to talk about labor, so they asked me to come, and it was an organization made up like a bunch of businessmen and women. Pretty active. They solicit money and do good works for different charities and stuff like that. Really great. And there were a few politicians there, and I was, so I spoke about farm workers, and it was right in the heat of some of the deaths or our campaign vigils that we were having. So I had the material to share that with them, and you could feel the pushback and the resistance. And one actually started questioning me and all. And I, yeah, that's right. But it seemed like others came back, and they were amazed. They didn't know what was happening in the fields, and that's the purpose. And those are the ones that we want to go visit, people who are not aware. Part of our ministry, National Farm Worker Ministry, is to bring awareness to the public, to raise the issues about farm workers so that they could be. And out of that came a few people who wanted to sign up to UFW and FWM and became at least financial supporters, if nothing else. But they were not aware of I thought that died a long time ago. They go, no, 50 years ago, we're still in the same boat, really. People are suffering, and children in the fields, you know, still picking to try and make ends meet for the families and also. But not that many people that I have talked to. Maybe I'm sure it's because of the circles that I visit. I'm trying to figure out how do you get to the other, because they're the ones we need to convert. You know, how do we get there? What tools is out there that can help us promote that? And I don't see it happening other than small groups, one to one sort of thing, because. When you're talking to a big crowd and that person is in the crowd, it seems like they build a shield around themselves. I'm not going to listen to this, you know, sort of protecting, I think, what they may already know. Hey, You know, if you're human, the other person is important too, huh? So far, no, I've not had that much resistance. Of course, there are some organizations or churches that they're not, oh no, they tell you they're not interested in different ways, like, oh, their plate is full right now, da-da-da-da. But we keep going back to them, though. Eventually, they get tired. And so if we want them bad enough, they get tired. And just symbolically, they'll say yes, just to, you know, appease us. But it's amazing that it touches some of the congregations, the people in their congregations. And they say, oh, there is energy here. Oh, they won't be that bad at me if I do this. So, yeah.
Thanks. Can you tell me a little bit more about your personal background and perhaps how parts of your personal background, your past, where you're from, maybe has impacted your work with the ministry today?
I was born in Mexico, Chihuahua. We came out here when I was very young, lived in Texas, San Juan, in Texas. I remember when I was little, maybe 4 or 5, there were some, had those little TVs. Actually, it wasn't ours, it was our neighbors. And I remember being there with the whole family watching the news, and there was a disturbance, some rioting with some blacks. And I was tiny. And I remember I got so mad, I just stood up and I held my hands on my waist and I said, when I grow up, I'm going to marry a black man. Like if that was going to take care of me. But just watching that, I think, marked me. You know, that shouldn't happen. That, you know, as a child. So growing up, not too much, except my dad always took in people, whether from the family. We were a large family, but we always had somebody that needed some help, you know, staying with us. So it's part of charity. But then I think in my teens, late teens, my dad became involved with Mexican American Political Association in LA, and they started a chapter. He was the first chairperson or president of a chapter in Pico Rivera. And at one point, we went to a convention, and I went, and Arturo Cesar Chavez spoke, and that marked me. So. I started collecting food and taking it on caravans to Delano, that kind of stuff. And a few months down the road, or during those first years, I think, the boycott was beginning, the great boycott. And Cesar used to have, I don't remember how I found out, I guess it was through MAPA, conduct house meetings in East LA on First Street near the cemetery. I don't remember the house or the street, but it was on First Street near a cemetery in East LA. And I lived in La Puente, which is a little distance. Of course, we don't have transportation, and I used to have to borrow cars and take them without my parents knowing and that kind of stuff to go to the house meetings. So I did that and helped with the boycott in East LA on Beverly and Atlantic, somewhere around there. There was a market, and we used to boycott. Then things quieted down after the boycott. And the house meetings, I wasn't able to continue. I think if I had continued the house meetings, I would have been involved all that time with Cesar. But I didn't have transportation, and my parents, now you can't go, and that kind of stuff. And we're Mexican, so we do what our parents tell us to do. So, yeah, that started. I think that set a seed. So when I was invited to come to U of W, of course, that was in 201, I think. Yeah, to come organize. It was, yeah, of course, this is what I almost, you know, I wanted to do at the time, and didn't get to do much of that. So that was an exciting piece. So that's how I started that. And so there was something already there. And my father's very much an activist in his own, especially in Mexico. That's partly why he came. My mother got scared. there were teachers in Mexico, and they were organizing teachers. And it got a little hot, but they came out here. And yeah. What else could I tell you about?
One question. You mentioned when you're describing your father early on, you mentioned charity and then went on to talk about kind of some of his political involvement and your involvement with the boycott.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see a difference between that kind of maybe taking people in, or you said gathering food for people, and doing more of this organizing type work, which is maybe more of what you do with the National Farm Worker Ministry now?
Right. The definite difference. And I always knew it. And my dad did too, you know. Charity's good, and you need to do it when, you know, it's there in front of you. It's about something immediate that has to happen. But if you don't get to the source of any of it, you know, it'll never end. As it is, then, and the Bible tells us, you know, the Lord said, hey, the poor will always be with us. In a way, maybe the poor are here so that they can make us more human, you know. There's a difference. They both have to happen. But we tend to do it the easy way. And to me, charity is the easy way. To give is easier. I'm done. No commitment. No, you know, that's it. But if I do justice, you know, if I look for social change, if I work towards it, then it means I have to give a little bit more of myself, and I have to stretch myself often to points that I didn't think I possibly could, you know. And it's they that changes, you know, the people that are suffering that injustice. They're the ones that educate us, I think, or educate me, teach me, show me, pull from me, whatever it is that's necessary. You know? At the same time, I think they don't have the tools to do it themselves, so they need us as well, you know. They have a voice, but they don't have a platform from which to express it. So what we try to do is help them and bring him to that platform, you know, take him out of the shadows and have them tell their story. And that's it. When they tell their story, there's nothing more powerful than hearing straight from the person who suffered it, the story. With immigration reform, it's been incredible what the stories that we've been hearing, that we've always known were there, but now there's a voice, you know. With the Dreamers, they've done wonderful work, telling the suffering that's going on. And youth have, you know, this energy and vitality, and they lack the fear that some of us as adults begin to, oh, well, you know, we can't alienate our church. We can't do this or that. A little bit of fear, afraid. That's why I'm glad I'm a volunteer with the church, because they can't fire me. and I do enough of what they want me to do that they'd rather keep me on board, I think, than not. Of course, I don't do anything out of them. Terribly unorthodox or whatever. So I sort of toe the line. But everything we talk about with social justice, I can go back to the Catholic, all the documents, you know, whether it's scripture, church teaching, and it's right there, and they can't say, hey, no, you can't do that. Hey, talk to your your Pope and the Vatican about this. Tell me I can't do it.
So what are some of the documents you'd point to in a conversation like that?
Even with Vatican II document, and there's one there, it's called Gaudium et Spes, and it talks, one beautiful line, and I paraphrase it, it's in Spanish, los gozos, las esperanzas, los gozos, las esperanzas, las... Da-da-da. Of the poor. But in essence, what it's telling us is the joys and the hopes and the suffering of the poor are ours, you know, our joys, our pain, our suffering, and that we need to work towards towards making things right with people of God, okay, that we are one. That is beautiful document about justice. They have one that's recent, Veritati is truth and justice. And that's an amazing piece, too, that really tells our church, hey, you know, you have to work for social change. Things can't remain the way it is right now. And then all the teachings of Jesus, you know, everything. Yeah, you can point to. And he came, it's about the poor, you know. I came for them and to turn everything upside down, and that's what happens. And I think that's why we resist so much, that because everything's so fine for me, you know, I'm doing okay, and you're asking me to turn it upside down. I can't do that. People think that, you know, social justice, if you're going to follow that line, that you have to be poor. Well, you don't. You should be richer so you could help more, you know. If I have more, then I should give more. Share it equally. I love to hear about Warren Buffett and Bill Gates, you know, that they have an ideology or some kind of deep-rooted faith in giving, you know, in returning. They didn't get rich on their own, you know. They had some money that they were able to invest wisely, of course, and friends or whatever, and they were able to amass a lot of money. But people, you know, caused that to happen. So the poor are the ones that are suffering to make so many others rich, you know, today. And I think that needs to be more equitable, especially for farm workers. They are marching. Well, they started yesterday from Madera, California. About 50 farm workers committed to march 167 miles for 13 days from Madera to Sacramento. And they arrive on the 4th of September in Sacramento at a park. And from there, they go to the Capitol, an 8-mile. That's the last stretch. And they're marching for overtime. And overtime, which means in California, they get overtime after 10 hours a day and after 60 hours a week. And farm workers have been, they want 8 hours, the same as you and I, 8 hours a day, 40 hours a week overtime. Since 1973, when the labor laws were established in the United States, farm workers and domestic workers have been excluded from those labor laws. Seventy-three years ago is that law, and specifically excluding them. The conditions were different. There were a lot of families that owned farms, and I guess they didn't want to, I don't know, but things have changed, so we should have, you know, it should be level across the field. The other thing farm workers are marching for this month, these next 12 days, is for, it's called majority sign-up. Majority sign-up would be, right now the way the law is, and it's not about changing the law, it's an option of how they can organize and vote for a union. So they would, right now they vote, they do their organizing, they vote on the workplace, okay? And they're always subject to the supervisors and the growers. And as soon as they find out, of course, they start threatening, firing, taking away their social security, which they provided themselves, you know. So farm workers, I mean, they need a job. So they're afraid to organize. So, and even when they do, the growers end up violating their rights. I mean, serious violations. And there's no remedy. Once if the election takes place and it was established and found that the grower did violate rights, the court can find them and, you know, guilty of that and give them a fine, which is always a slap in the hand. But there's no remedy. the election is lost and there's nothing you can do. You have to wait another year. That's costly for the farm worker and for the union. So you can't continue like that. So the union wants, the UFW is proposing, and farm workers have signed on, and we've had some legislators come on board, a bill which would allow farm workers to vote outside of the workplace. So that would be where it would be free of intimidation. In June, we had a 13-day campaign in the Capitol every day with farm workers coming in. The first day we had 1,000 delivered a bill to the governor. And then 12 days following, we were there until the 12th day, which was the day that the deadline for the governor to sign the bill. And at that point, every day we had about 200-300 workers coming in and staying the whole day practically. These are workers who give up their jobs, okay, or the salary for that day, who may risk their jobs even, but they're doing, and they come with their families. So they make a big sacrifice from far away, so they would be bused in to Sacramento. So we were there, and on the last day, it was amazing. We were in the Capitol, started pouring. We were going to have an outdoor mass at 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock. But it started pouring, and we stayed in the Capitol. There were about 200-300 farm workers in there. And because it was pouring, we just remained there waiting for him to come out and say what he was going to do. Talk to the farm workers. Are you going to sign the bill? What's going to happen? Are you going to veto it? Tell it to our face. And he wouldn't. It was about 11:30 when he finally called Arturo. And there's all these farm workers there and some the legislators that support. Oh, by the way, while we were in the Capitol, of course, people were tired. And a lot of farm workers, they don't have babysitters, the luxury of leaving him with a babysitter. So they brought the whole family. The kids are there. But so, I mean, I was amazed at the patience and the perseverance that these farm workers have. If I had brought even our church group, a very, you know, sophisticated, very committed, very faith-filled group, and if they had been in that Capitol for the length of time that we were, they would have been crying and telling, let's go now, it's time to go, why are we doing it? That kind of complaining, you know, why don't we have water, where's the coffee, there's nothing to eat, whatever. They would have been complaining or bickering amongst themselves. I know that because we're used to comfort, right? Nobody ever complained or said anything. The kids were so good. They weren't running around like little monkeys. You know, they were just very patient, very good. And I think that the people who were most aware of the farm workers and how they behaved and their composure and patience, etc., were probably the police officers there. Because they were there 24 hours a day. We were there 12 days. And I'm sure that at the end, they almost knew some of the kids by names, the different shifts, especially the children. So, so about 9 o'clock or so, people were tired, so they started sitting on the hallway against the wall. And all of a sudden, the elevator started opening up, and the legislators and their aides were bringing sofas from their offices and couches. And we had like our own living room in the hallway. And I look around, I tell the farmer, this is our house. That's why they're doing it. This is your house, you know. This is ours. And I think they felt like, yeah, it's we belong here. We have to be here. But at 11:30, the governor calls Arturo Rodriguez, the president of the UFW, and we have a conversation on tape. It's on recorded. It's on YouTube, but only from Arturo's end, right? Talking to the governor, and the governor vetoes. And it happened that while Arturo's talking to him, one of the aides gives him the phone with a message that there's a press advisory already on the veto. And so Arturo tells him, but governor, you already vetoed. Why are we discussing this? Something like that. And there was a silence, you could tell. Since I have the press advisory here, it already went out. You already vetoed. You never even had, he didn't say, well, the nerve to come out and face farm workers and tell them, you're vetoing and why. And they argued back and forth. And the governor hung up. Well, Arturo Rodriguez tried to visit the union tried to have meetings with him for the past 2 years, and he kept putting it off. So we had no alternative. The governor was mad because we were doing this campaign. Why are you doing this? You never talked to me. Well, you never called. We never spoke. You know, we wanted to talk. The same thing's happening today, and that's why the workers are marching. They're marching to reintroduce that bill and adding the overtime. So 50 farm workers are committed to do the whole 167-mile walk, and others join in every city. And my job in Sacramento has been, and will be when I get back from the meeting, is to organize the churches, the religious communities around, to come to the action, the final rally on the 4th of September. And that's going to be exciting. And it's great because I've had some really good conversations with different pastors. And the latest was a rabbi. He says, Lucy, this is Rabbi Bindi. I'm ready to go. He says, shalom to you and everything. I'm ready. Whatever you need. You come to Friday services, Shabbat or something, and we'll let you speak. We're ready to go. So that's, I think we'll have a good turnout. It's great.
So you maybe have already kind of gotten into this question a little bit, but I'm curious how you see, having worked with the National Farm Worker Ministry for at least a few years now, and hearing about what's going on in other regions of the country, I'm curious as to how you see the farm worker movement and the work of the National Farm Worker Ministry in California as kind of distinct or different.
The ministry, I think it's different in a sense because there's a lot of other organizations that are, you know, working for farm worker justice. And what ours does is provides direct support for especially unions who are in particular campaigns and need help in organizing the community, especially the religious community. So our ability, and it's like we can't spread ourselves thin, but we've been able to focus on certain particular campaigns directly, like especially with UFW, where they need, like for Sacramento right now, they need help organizing the religious community. So I'm there and able to get in there. And again, because I bring those relationships to the mix, and I always throw the name in. I work at, you know, with the Archdiocese, and as a volunteer, I always say that. But I was named by Bishop Zavala, and I'm on the Commission of Justice and Peace, named by Cardinal Mahoney, so I throw those names around, and it does make a difference. They, you know, oh, yes, they make it bigger than it is. I'm not telling them it's bigger, I'm just, hey, I was named, and that was it, but they, I think, draw a bigger picture. But luckily that some of the bishops do know who I am, if not personally my name. So if anybody asks, you know, they're able to. I think with National Farm Worker Ministry and what we presently do, we're a good resource, I think, for other organizations that do farm worker ministry work. I don't know if that's what you were looking
for. Yeah, and your exposure to what's going on in other parts of the country with the farm worker ministry, mm-hmm. Do you see California's work as different in some way from what's going on in other parts of the country? Or
In probably not. No.
Cool.
No, not. No, and there's some wonderful work being done in Florida with the youth, hoping to get some Yaya groups out in our way. Sometimes being in Los Angeles sort of limits us because we don't have the direct farm worker, you know, connection with the farm workers. But the history's there. And when we started with our advisory committee, I remember some of the pastors saying, you know, there's a disconnect. between the UFW or the farm workers and Los Angeles. And that's what we need to bridge with a disconnect, is bringing again the advocacy to the churches, the education, the formation, and that. But one thing I did want to say is that I think I got a senior moment. It went somewhere else. There was something I was going to say about the tune.
About the what?
About farm worker ministry
and
the faith and myself. Certainly I've been marked by working with National Farm Worker Ministry. I remember too, when I started with UFW, I mentioned it to one of the priests that I knew worked closely with farm workers. And he says, "Oh, Lucy, that's good," because I was going to be organizing. I did for 2 years. That was hard. It was exciting and all, but it was hard. Because you feel like you're up against a brick wall with the growers, what they do. But he says, "Where you belong is with National Farm Worker Ministry." I go, "Yeah?" But I didn't know anything about National Farm Worker Ministry. And I was too excited to go and work with UFW. And I hadn't even been looking for a job. They asked me. So I thought, "Oh, I'm going to go." Yeah, so I had to pay attention. Years later, I come back, and he just looks at me. "You're working where?" I go, "Yeah." He says, "That's where you belong." Because mostly, I guess, he was connecting the faith element of the church. And I think that's important for farm workers, because no matter what religion they are, and most of them have at least a basis, of, or rather some kind of Catholic faith, some sort, and you connect. And I think we need to bring that because we noticed that when we took water and shade, we shared with them. We were about to leave, and I had invited some pastors from Bakersfield, and we were about to finish and leave, and I looked around, and I thought, the pastors know what they want to do. They want to evangelize, because they were evangelicals. And I see an emptiness over here, so I asked the pastors, "Would you want to pray, you know, with the farm workers?" They said, "Yeah." So I asked the farm workers, "Would you want prayer?" They said, "Yeah." They started lining up for the pastors for prayer. So, and some of them wouldn't leave them alone. They wanted to talk, you know. So there's a need for that, for them, you know, the faith element in this whole thing. So some of my work with UFW has been to bring in, to do the prayer vigils, the prayer services, and that kind of stuff. Yeah, that. And farm worker ministry, yes, has marked me, has given me the opportunity to blend the two, you know, the church and the community with a very concrete, not solution, but an opportunity to come to some kind of response or solutions to the farm worker issues in our country today.
When you say marked me, what do you mean?
It's like... it's given me an experience that's deepened what I've already believed, but also I will never forget, you know. It's like from there I can do whatever I do.
Do you think you could articulate ways in which this marking or the involvement with the ministry has impacted other areas of your life and relationships?
Yeah, it has, okay, first, it's made me even more aware that it's a job and a work or a dream that we can't fulfill alone. It has to be about coalitions. It has to be about looking for resources, whether it be people or financial, whatever, from every, and mostly because it's a food that connects us, but also because I can't get my thoughts together with that, but it's something that we're not going to be able to do alone. And we need to do, and that's why I like the mission statement partly, is that, you know, it's about advocating. It's about educating and informing. And it's about bringing groups together to become a response or to answer to the issue of injustice at the in the workplace, I think. One thing, we're talking about marking. I think, like walking the march, marks people. It's a journey that you do with other people for, and this is what the June's action did too. We were there for 13 days, and those people are marked. You know, the officers that were there in the Capitol were marked. Maybe some to a lesser extent, but I think some were marked. The ones that stood there for some of the prayer services were marked. They had to sort of like, you know, sort of like get stern and pretend that they weren't listening, you know. And we talked to a few afterwards. They were very special. But when we take people to visit the farm workers and they interact, they bring to the farm worker a sense of people care. And that's what they've expressed. And when they, the people that go do this, of course, get much more from the farm worker because they see that what they're doing is very little, but it's a worthy cause, right? And that there is a possibility to change people's lives because some of them have come out of that, you know. Some of the people that we've taken have been farm workers, and there's a real strong connection. I remember I took a few of our advisory committee people to a board meeting, an NFWM board meeting in LA, and they listened to some of the stories of what the board members were sharing as they introduced themselves, and they laughed, and they saw how old some of them was. There was one lady, Jeannie Gerardino, I forget her name. She died just recently, we can get her name. She came in a wheelchair with a breathing apparatus. Her husband with a cane. I think she was 82. She celebrated her 82nd birthday there. And many of the others, you know, the number of years that they have been doing this kind of ministry. So when they left, they said, oh my God, I was so impressed and amazed. And they shared at the big group, the groups where we have the convocatorias. Once a month, they gave their little testimony. And I remember one of the ladies said, you know, they're doing what we need to be doing. And they were all Anglos. they were all Anglos. And they're out there doing what we should be doing, you know. And for them, that was impressive, that people should care who aren't even of your own, supposedly. I think we're all one, but, you know. So, yeah, they receive as much as from seeing both ends. You know, the farm workers are touched. They know that they're cared for, that people do have a passion for making things different. So there's hope. And from our end, or the people that we take, they see that, geez, there is a tremendous need, and there's a place for me to help find solutions.
It occurred to me that you've mentioned race a couple times in this conversation, mm-hmm. and that you're going to marry an African American man, and that many of the people with the National Farm Worker Ministry are Anglos. Does race come into this work in a substantial way, and how? If so.
Yeah. I have been either privileged, or I'd rather be in the other. You know, I'd rather be in churches where there's not so many Latinos, you know, so that I can better maybe stop preaching to the choir, you know. Although many Latinos are also already so enculturated, they forget their roots and they're in the same place. So race, more than ever, I think it's become so, it's present there, and people are looked at differently, especially farm workers. They're dispensable. I've seen it more and more when we interact with the growers, and it's just blatant racism, I think. I've not encountered too much, you know, I think it is, maybe it is there, but what I see, the face I see is more of apathy with people, whether they be Latinos or Anglos or whatever, as far as a need to respond to any social justice, anything has to do with the poor. You know, the poor should be able to do it themselves. I did. You know, what's the matter with them? It's just because they're lazy. And farm workers are not lazy. They are not lazy. Farm workers, I mean, they know how to hustle. And actually, not just farm workers, the poor do. They go out there, they sell oranges. They don't put a, you know, they don't ask for handouts. They want to work. And that's what they tell me. I want to work. I'm here because I want to work. I need to make money to feed my family. That's it. But I've not been subjected to, you know, or seen blatantly out in my face. It's more in the form of, you know, well, I'm not interested, apathy, and I think it's disguising sometimes, not all the time. But I think that's our job, you know, to talk to those people and enter into conversations that starts to tear down their own, whether there be biases or myths, but somehow maybe even just look at this person as a human being, you know. How would you? Because on a one-to-one, they wouldn't do the things they do collectively, you know. I think.
What would you like to tell people today that might be interested in becoming involved with the farm worker movement through the National Farm Worker Ministry?
I think I'd like to tell them that it's something that's not in your face all the time if you're in the city, so that we don't see it, we don't know it's there. But if maybe you could remember that every time you eat a fruit, a vegetable, something that has been grown or harvested, that a farm worker touched it, if they could just start being conscious of that, and then seeking ways to inform themselves through either UFW or NFWM.org, a webpage, to find out what's going on. I think they can start there. But until they make the connection, I think that someone is providing for us in a very substantial way, at very cheap labor. You know, I think the United States is cheapest food, you know, in the world, percentage-wise. You know, we pay very little for food compared to other parts of the world, and basically it's because we're making money off the backs of the poor. If we paid farm workers, if we increased their salary, I think to $10 an hour, but it's really crazy, even if it weren't, $10 an hour, that we'd end up spending maybe $8 a year more on our fruits and vegetables, if they were paid more. It wouldn't cost us all that much, you know, as a people. In terms of the food that we buy, it's the growers are the ones that are making dough here. You know, that's the bottom line, and they're making it off the backs of the poor. And I think that is what we need to address and stop. So I would tell people, every time you eat an apple, an orange, a banana, whatever it is, every time you eat your vegetables, every time you sit at the table, just think of a farm worker and start searching for places to go. Whenever you're called on to do to sign a petition, make a telephone call to do so, and to include farm workers in your prayers all the time. But let's do it, the prayer in action, which would be going the next step, you know.
Thank you. Are there any other stories you'd like to share or comments you'd like to make?
I think it's a statistic for the country that people in general believe that the only way to bring solutions to farm workers and is through union. And I believe it's the truth because I've seen it. The fields are vast. They're huge. Like in California, there are like 600,000 farm workers on a you know, that harvest throughout the country, throughout the state every year, with about, I believe, 60,000 farms. And to monitor and to keep those growers honest about the work that they do, or about the way they treat the farm workers, there are 200 inspectors, OSHA inspectors. They're the ones that if there's a complaint that they will invest. Well, they're never going to do it. They can't. You know, they can't. They go to one farm, they investigate, they slap them in the hand with a few violations, they come back, and most of the time the violations aren't taken care of, they're not paid, and they never return to see if it happened, okay? So it's not going to happen. The only way that it can happen is through union. And I would say if you're called upon to vote or make a call about farm workers being unionized, do it, and do it right away, and continue to do it. Call your governors, your legislators, make them accountable for that. That's the only way farm workers will really have their say in court, I think. They gain the respect that they need in the workplace because they can govern themselves. They would make sure that nobody dies because they didn't have water. They would make sure that the children aren't working. You know, they would take care of themselves, and they do. And none of the farms that none of the people who have died came from unionized farm growers, or you know, they were all unsupervised or well, that's where they came from. Bottom line, so that's what I would say. Do your part, because. By supporting farm workers in that way, writing letters, calling your, especially the legislators, because they're afraid, they won't do, and they're, yeah, especially, I'm not going to tell you what they are, but they are, they forget. And Cesar Chavez, one of the Father Decker. Father Decker is a member of an organization, Catholic Scholars for Worker Justice, and it's a national organization. They do some wonderful work with social justice and worker justice issues. And he wrote a letter. I asked him if he would support us and write to the governor, so he did. And he knows the governor's family personally. And I asked him again for this march, and he did. He sent me the letter. And he tells the governor, hey, you know, I knew your father through, and he throws the name through the Purcell family. And I know that, you know, he would certainly support this, you signing. And then he quotes Cesar Chavez saying that something to the effect that the growers, unions, agencies, legislators, are put in power by the power of the people. So it's the people who have the power to put you in place. But once you get there, you forget and assume the power all for yourself, something like that. So he says, and I don't want this to be your case. So governor, sign the bill. Don't veto it again. So I was very pleased with that letter. And I know that the governor's not going to be too happy with it. But let's see if he signs this time. At least, we don't know what he'll do, but we're pushing for him to sign. And to have enough legislators on board that if he doesn't, that's why we need people to call in and to write in to the legislators, is that we would have enough legislators to veto, because that has not been the case. You know, he vetoes and we don't have enough to override the veto. So that's what we're hoping to do, to just get legislators so committed that they're not going to back down, and they're going to let the governor know that if he vetoes, they would override it, and that would be worse for him. So, but that takes a lot of work. And give money, definitely. Nothing works without funds. We're limited with NFW, and we're so limited with funds. But we do a lot with the little that we have. So, yeah, if you, you know, just sign up and give your monthly donation or bequeath your estate, that would be fun. Yeah, that's what we want.
Nice.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for this conversation and for pushing, as you said. One quick clarification question I was interested in. When you take groups to visit farm workers, are they always unionized farm workers that you know through UFW contacts?
No.
Usually not? Or?
Usually, well, it hasn't been for us. We've just dropped in. Yeah. Either we try and target places where we're trying to organize, you know.
So they're people that you've built a relationship with and you're bringing to continue building that relationship.
Right, uh-huh, right. Right, or we just meet because they usually after work, especially on a Friday, just meet at a local park or something. So we just go put up our little our food place at the park and start calling the farm workers in. So they're from different companies. We've done that a few times because they go cash their check and then they sit around at the park talking and all. And we draw them to stay in and bring meals. Or we invite them beforehand, tell them we're going to be there with, you know, some food and want to share with them, and we've had some pretty good experiences. But no, we've gone because you know, the ones that are unionized are already in the union. We have brought some to come and share about what the difference is, you know, be working in a union, and so that the workers themselves, the others, could see it does make sense. You know, it would be worthwhile. It would be to our benefit to be organized. But organizing right now, farm workers for union is so rough. Because of the lack of resources that the union has in terms of getting the organizers out, it's got to be constantly a one-to-one. Because today the farm worker will, yes, I'm on 100%. And tomorrow he finds out through chisme is, you know, the scuttle. That so-and-so is involved in the union, and the supervisor comes and intimidates, so the next day you lost him. So it's a constant working with him, and we need a lot of organizers for that. So it's hard. And we think that majority sign-up bill would be helpful. They still have the option to do the other, you know, in the workplace, but the majority sign-up is just to help level the field for farm workers, that they're not intimidated and they're able to vote as they want. And we feel that that would be an answer for us to have a union.
Great. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. And do you edit this? I hope.